relationships, religion, Chris Harrington's birthday reality. This is the good news on Glenn Klein Online.
Take no big thing to wear for the battery. Take no big thing to toll of the bell. I probated the spare for days. I troll downtown, the red light plays. Jump on for the luck, what's in store? Love is the drug and I need. Showing up, showing up, hit them run. Boy meets girl where the beat goes on. Stitched up tight, can't shake free. Love is the drug.
Beautiful humans, this is Glenn Klein Online. It is Hump Day, Wednesday, November 7th, 2012, the only 59th birthday of Chris Harrington and Chris Harrington's reality in the history of the world. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for that reality. Chris Harrington! Yes, each time this week, we welcome the intermediator on. Please say hello to the birthday boy, Mr. Chris Harrington.
All right, birthday boy, that sounds so good.
59 years old, 59 years young.
Young, that's right. State of mind.
It's all a number, isn't it?
It is. Not the years, it's the miles.
It's a what?
It's the miles. It's the mileage.
It's not the years, it's the miles. Well, you're doing pretty good, I think. Happy birthday to you, my friend.
Doing all right.
Well, we have to greet you, of course, with the official Glenn Klein Online webcast birthday greeting. Are you ready for it?
Do I get to keep my clothes on?
I don't see why not.
Okay.
Happy. Everybody join in. Sean, please feel free. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Chris. Happy birthday to you. Hope you get some tonight. Hope you get some tonight. Hope you get some cake and ice cream. Hope you get some tonight. Ooh.
I love that. How great is that?
Yes.
Well, it'll have to be a virtual cake and virtual ice cream because I am solid eating nothing but really good food. It's called clean eating. Clean eating.
All right. So how would you describe clean eating? You're avoiding cake and ice cream. All right.
Yeah, I'm avoiding stuff that is detrimental to my health. And I am embracing all things positive and nutritional.
So what did Glenda stick a candle in, like, a piece of tofu or something?
No candle and no. Also, I didn't have tofu today. I had chicken today, but yeah, it was essentially that's what happens every day. So every day, in fact, earlier this week I went camping, and for every meal for 3 solid days, I ate nothing but chicken and asparagus. I went on a clean out weekend while I was out in the wilderness.
How did you cook the chicken and asparagus?
I already had it cooked, and all I did was put it in tin foil, and I had a grill, and I put that on our campfire, and I grilled it right there and cooked it up and ate it out of tin foil.
And what were your compatriots that were camping with you saying about
it? Oh, they had all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, everything, camp food, you know, like multiple things with everything with beans and onions in it, and lots of meat and lots of cheese. And tortillas and potatoes and all kinds of wonderful things.
And how
oatmeal that's flavored and it has they'll put in multiple packs, and then for every pack that they put in, they call it that thing. So it's like banana, cream, coconut, cream, banana, apple. And that will be the name of the meal. And repeat that every time you want something. I'll have some of that banana. I mean, like that.
And did you eat some of that?
I didn't have any of that. Nothing. I had nothing that they had all weekend long. I think I had one. I cooked a sausage on a stick on Friday night because when I got there, I was ravenous and they were ready to go. And so I did that. Friday night, that was my only time I was off. Asparagus and chicken all weekend. And they were like, you're crazy. And I'm like, dude, do this. So I do like a couple sets of 50 push-ups. Okay.
What are you trying to do to your middle years? You're trying to...
What's my middle years? I love hearing that. You mean, what's my goal?
Yeah, why are you doing this?
I'm staying in shape. I got lots to do. I'm not finished yet, you know? So I'm not rolling over and just taking this. You know, rage against the dying of the light. That's what I'm doing. I'm fighting tooth and toenail because I've got lots of things to say. I'm not done yet.
All right. Well, we're going to.
I'll let you know when I'm done.
Jerry Weintraub, the famous entertainment promoter and agent, wrote a book. He wrote his life story and it said, "You'll know I'm dead when I'm done talking."
That's right.
This is Glenn Klein online, not dead yet, still talking. Sean O'Halloran in studio. If you're listening live on Wednesday night, it's about 7 minutes after 9 o'clock. You guys could feel free to call and ask any questions, or perhaps you want to wish Chris a happy birthday. You know, most of you guys listen on the archive, but if you're listening live, feel free. Sean is waiting in studio at 1-800-436-3260. That is the Glenn Klein Online toll-free hotline, 1-800-436-3260. All over the world, you can call directly at 813-425-5773.
Do you guys want a little bit of science to back up that middle years part?
I love that. Go for it.
Have you ever heard of a telomere?
A telomere.
It's, I think I'm pronouncing that right. It's something in your body's cells that it's kind of associated
genetics?
With DNA, and
yeah,
it basically when your cells, you know, your cells divide, and you know, they keep growing, and that's how you know you grow more cells, whatever they divide, but it kind of splits in half and then regrows, but the telomere splits in half, and that's it. It splits in half, and then that half splits in half, and then that keeps going on. And that goes on until the average age that people could potentially live to is about 120. At that point, the telomere, you're down to like one telomere, and then that splits in half, and then you start having cell mutations, and your cells don't reproduce correctly, and they start mutating. So that's why the most that most people can live to, it's about 120 years old. That's
so literally the clock runs out on your genetics.
Yeah.
I love that. Good explanation.
So you're right at the mid times.
All right, very good. Well, I'm gonna kick it as hard as possible.
It seems to be an accurate description.
All right.
Thanks, Sean. Sean O'Halloran.
Telomeres. I'm gonna look that up.
I
made myself a note on my secret sheet.
Do you have, like, can you see in the closet there in Nacogdoches?
Yeah. Do I have what?
You got like, light?
What? Oh, yeah, I'm sitting in the light. Yeah, what? Yeah. I shut the door because the cat always wants to get in my lap and knock stuff around and get on my stuff and knock my papers over. He's very friendly and very loving and very, when you don't want him to, he's very obnoxious.
Sounds about right.
So yeah, he's a cat.
It sounds like a cat.
When you look that up, there's exceptions to every rule, and some people have lived past 120, but they are essentially their cells are basically just dividing slower, so they kind of stretch on the process longer.
So they're on a slower clock. That's a really interesting thing.
That's essentially.
I wonder how they're going to figure that part out.
why some people have faster cellular...
Yeah, they'll figure out some way to slow down everybody's clock.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, then, but then if you, your metabolism is slower, and if you get injured, you won't heal very fast.
Oh.
Well, you're just all full of all kinds of interesting information, and I should...
Well, I'll tell you, there's a give and take on everything, isn't there?
No.
Interdependence.
No doubt.
Yeah.
So every week we start, and every day I start with the attitude, okay, this is the only day like it ever.
Sure.
But we actually did have a little bit more significant history than just any ordinary unique day yesterday here in the good old U.S. of A.
Sure.
President Barack Obama got reelected last night.
He did.
There was a lot of historical stuff even behind that. But, of course, regardless of what happened in the election, last night it was going to be a night of history, and
sure.
There's the country here in the United States, Chris, is pretty much split 50-50, at least those that voted.
Yeah, it's pretty close. I think we're a divided country, you could say that.
Yeah, and so and I have, you know, followed politics for as long as I can remember. I mean, even when I was a kid, I had an unusual interest. I remember getting into debates and arguments with my
sure.
history teacher when I was 16 years old, when Jimmy Carter beat Gerald Ford. And I've been fascinated with politics and the news and the whole situation. I think my interest and background in broadcasting has something to do with it, but I've always been fascinated by the human experience, the human condition. But you said something to me the other day about, I don't know who you quoted, but you said that the news never changes.
Henry David Thoreau.
Yeah, Thoreau said...
Yeah, it's just the names change.
Just the names change. And it occurred to me the amount of time, because part of what we've been working on is, frankly, time management and maximizing and utilizing my time more effectively.
Yeah.
The focus on current events and the news and politics and watching and reading and listening to all that, and I've always been very, very much up to date on all that. It takes so much time.
It does.
And there was something about you saying that the news never changes, just the times change, or just the names change.
Yeah.
And I mean, we had this horrific hurricane on the East Coast last week called Hurricane Sandy, but you just could replace it for Hurricane Katrina. In another location.
In another location, that's right.
Or the tsunami in Japan or in Indonesia.
Right.
I mean, and
that doesn't lessen the necessity for us to pay attention and to understand that human beings are suffering tremendously. But what it does do is it says that there aren't days when this is not happening to some degree everywhere on the planet.
Right.
We're just not cognizant of it because it's not happening to us.
Exactly. And we always, of course, overemphasize and focus on the things that are happening closest to us.
Sure.
But we have so much less empathy for the suffering. You know, it's just like we've talked about this before on this program. But the concept of going into war, let's say, whether it be in Afghanistan or Iraq,
sure.
To find or to overthrow one regime, and the analogy that I've drawn is, could you imagine if there was a mass murderer in your neighborhood, in a suburban neighborhood here in the United States, or wherever you guys are listening,
right.
and he's holed up in one house in a neighborhood of 50 homes,
yeah,
and we decide to go in and take out the entire neighborhood, and that is acceptable collateral damage, as they call it, to get the one guy. That would never be acceptable, but because
right.
it's over there, somehow that collateral damage, those innocents that suffer that kind of situation, that's acceptable because it's far away and it's separate.
Well, it's
from
like
us.
The concept of light casualties. You know, it's light if not too many people die, except for the fact that if it's your son or daughter, or brother or cousin. Or dad, or mom, you know, then even one person is extremely heavy. So this kind of relative way of looking at things, this relative morality, couched in an absolute, is kind of off-putting to me.
Yeah, and so many of the people that would support that kind of military action are the ones that say they believe in absolute morality.
Yeah, kill them all and let God sort it out.
Right, but they don't. They don't believe in absolute morality because, again, if they came into their neighborhood and the law enforcement officials decided to carpet bomb the neighborhood,
they'd be completely undone about that.
Right. So what is it about the human condition, Chris, that allows for that kind of selective morality?
It's our constant need to put things into boxes. We create a buffer zone between us and having to really deal with things on an intimate level. So that's why in all things I attempt to create intimate spaces with people because it cuts right through all that stuff. But it's the concept of objectification. If I objectify somebody, I can be psychotic towards that person. You mean Buffalo Bill and Silence of the Lambs. You know, it will do so-and-so. It will this. It will that. As long as he didn't say the girl's name, he was okay because it was just an object, like a cockroach. It didn't matter to him. Even my saying like a cockroach objectifies the cockroach. So what we do is we objectify things until finally they just don't matter to us anymore. And then we can do whatever we want. We can rationalize anything. It's only, you know, whatever slandering term you want to use about a certain kind of human being. And as long as you can use that slandering term, well, then that person's less than human and therefore subject to experimentation or whatever you want.
You posted on Facebook today your description of yourself as an anarchist.
Sure.
And why don't you explain to the beautiful humans what you mean by that and how that plays into not objectifying a nation of people or even individuals?
Well, I don't objectify anything at all. I mean, as an intellectual position, I'm working on this. I think we're all working on who we are as human beings. But what an anarchist does, from my sense of the terminology, is that he operates without any outside influences to rule over him. All right. Like, say, for example, how I am able to operate within the framework of, universal reconciliation is that if the law of Moses is done away with, if it's finished, if Jesus nailed the law to the tree, then we're operating in freedom. All right. Free to choose. Not because you have to, but because you get to. And that, to me, is the perfect sense of what anarchy is really all about. I think that there's the position of anarchy or anarchism, and being an anarchist means that I have my own rules. It's the extreme position of libertarianism, all right? Libertarianism asks for some amount of control, some amount of organization, and I'm asking that people be on their own reconnaissance, but that they be capable of making rational decisions that are based on relationships with all human beings, objectifying no one, not objectifying any species. So it's not okay to go out and plow up the turtles in the ponds. It's not okay to go out and kill all the buffalo, 20,000 of them at a time, just because they're standing there and you can shoot them with a gun. I would say that every species is sacred. And in that sense, I'm extremely fanatical to some people. One of the arguments that we talked about earlier was the whole nonsense, I think, of people tripwiring on abortion and on execution. Some people would say no abortion whatsoever, but it's okay to execute people. So the rationalization there is life is sacred until you're born, and after that, you better agree with me, otherwise I'll kill you.
Well, but a lot of people, and I agree with that, but a lot of people, and I think that to have a anti-abortion and an anti-death penalty position is consistent. It's maybe one of the only things I agree with the Catholic Church about.
Yeah.
But the people that are pro-death penalty would argue that that is a perfect way to demonstrate the sacredness or the sanctity of life by saying if you kill somebody, you have to pay the ultimate sacrifice because that life that you took
sacrifice would be Christ dying on the cross. That would be God dying.
Yeah.
Human beings are all going to die at some time in the future. I don't think it's up to us to decide when they do that. It's like the whole nonsense of when people talk about pro-choice as being pro-abortion. Nobody wants anybody to have an abortion. Being pro-choice doesn't mean you, hey, let's go out and kill all the babies. That's not what it means at all. All right? So I think that these people are making decisions, just like people who are allowing for people to be assassinated are making decisions. Whether I agree with that or not, I pay my government fee, my taxes, and with that money, they send predator bombs over and they blow people up. And I'm not necessarily standing on the street corner, but I talk about it all the time. And I also support a woman's right to choose, although I have, you know, begged many, many women to think about it. I've seen lots of situations. I haven't never met anybody who said, I'm so glad I got an abortion. But at the same time, that to me is a choice that someone has with their body. So I have to remain at least as neutral as I can be about these circumstances. I can't control about whether my government is going to assassinate somebody. I can't control about whether someone's going to have an abortion. And what I can do is I'll facilitate as much as I can and as I need to. And at the same time, I will argue and pin my opinion about it as much as possible. But, you know, I can't stop what other people are doing. I can only stop what I would be doing.
Right, but where does the philosophy of anarchy come, because you as your example of shooting 20,000 buffaloes just so because you have a gun you can shoot them, and you said that's wrong, and
I think it's ineffective. You know, again, you know, it's about the moral issue. My question is, if you got five guys and they shoot 20,000 buffalo, there's no way in the universe that they can skin those things and process the meat. They're only shooting them for sport. That's a total waste of those animals.
All right, but it sounds like, I agree with that, of course.
Yeah, but, and that idea on every level is what I believe in, on every level. I don't see any need to raise an entire mountain just to get the resources out of it. I don't see any reason to cut down all the forest in order to get it, the whole thing of like global warming. I don't care if the transformation of the climate is due to Mickey Mouse. What I want to know is, do you want more pollution? If you don't want more pollution, it doesn't matter if it's about global warming or not. It's just the nonsense of asking yourself, you know, do you want more pollution?
Right.
That's a pretty simple and straightforward thing.
No, that's true. But if you're anywhere, we're getting to some different areas tonight. I like this.
The thing is that this is the topic that I wanted to get on tonight.
All right, well, hold on before you
wait,
do that.
Just one second.
Okay.
I want to talk about intermediation as a practical thing that we go through every day, and this is really a part of it, is that for me, how I make my choices is with this base value of, there's no such thing as a differentiation between what is sacred and what is material. It's all sacred to me. There's no non-God. There's no non-sacredness. It's all holy. And I want to treat everything with that aspect of its being sacred. People I don't know on the other side of the planet, they have just as much right to live as I do.
Okay, so which begs the question, whether it be on the issue of pollution, what if people don't agree with your perspective, and they are polluting more than.
Well, they are, and I talk about it all the time.
Yeah, but so what do you do? What do you do about that?
Well, you know, sometimes you go directly and you directly service the need by being on the site, and you complain bitterly, and you raise signs, and you protest right there. Sometimes you do it on the radio or in your writing. I mean, I posted a million words this year. Some of it was about just that idea of how ridiculous it is to say, you know, just because you don't believe in global warming means that it's okay to pollute. I don't think that people are saying that. So my question is, what are they doing to work against the pollution, regardless of what impact it has on the climate? And most people would say, oh, it's not affecting the climate, I don't care. And I say, great, you live downwind of it.
No, but
they're not doing that.
See, and that's you know, the libertarian perspective is that the least government governs best, but the government that is closest to the people is the most, here's that word again, effective, because people don't want to live down by pollution. But the whole point is not to have it be as local and controlled by the individuals
right.
gathered together as possible.
Right. Yeah, and I think that what happens is that there's some amount of people becoming a little bit jaded when they have a governing body. They can say, well, let those guys take care of it. I'm going to sit here in front of the TV and do this. If you didn't have a government, you'd have, man, I could impact this. You know, where I started thinking this way was when I was about, I think I was about 13 years old. I was already thinking like this emotionally when I was four, but as far as politically thinking about this, although I remember lots of political things I did in elementary school, in my neighborhood, we lived in Nottingham West down in Houston, and they had a Meridian out in front of the neighborhood, and they had $50,000. And they had a crack in the swimming pool, and they had this Meridian where they wanted to put flowers. And so they put an all-call out to all the neighborhood. Well, there are like, you know, 400 houses or something like that in that neighborhood, and there were all these people could show up and vote about it. Well, six families showed up. Six people were represented there, and they got to tell what was going to happen with this $50,000. Well, these six people, they didn't care anything about the swimming pool because they didn't have kids, so they wanted the flowers and the Meridian. Well, we got halfway through the summer, and the pool had cracked, and it was causing horrible infections in the kids' ears, and they had to drain the swimming pool and do it anyway, and then they had to take out a loan because they didn't have the money because they'd used it in putting up flowers in the Meridian. Well, why didn't all those other people kick in, the kids, the people that had kids and stuff? They didn't think about it because they were letting other people control it. And I think that's what happens, is that the further people get away from governing themselves, the more jaded that they get and the more complacent that they get, until finally they don't think about it anymore. You know, to me, a direct democracy where everybody votes and they all pay attention and everybody is into it, that's why I like tribal thinking. Everybody has a place and everybody has value. But we're way distant from that. We've got people that are so dislocated and disenfranchised, they're not thinking about it anymore.
No.
They're not being thought of and they're not thinking about.
No doubt.
So everybody takes advantage and also takes for granted everything.
Well, the thing that might and would, in fact, have a significant impact on that kind of thinking would be to realize that we do intermediation ourselves.
Exactly.
Every day. And when,
exactly.
And when we return from the break, we are going to get in to this whole concept of inner, self-intermediation.
That's
when
right.
When we return right here on the Good News on Glenn Klein Online.
I like it.
The Good News on Glenn Klein Online is brought to you in part by the guruofgratitude.com. Make money being nice. TheGuruOfGratitude.com. GuruOfGratitude.com. Call toll free to make money being nice. 888-493-7482 is the number. 888-493-7482. The Guru of Gratitude.com. I could never hear that song anymore without thinking of Forrest Gump running all over the country. But
I just saw him the other night, and we talked to him backstage. What a wonderful human being.
The great Jackson Browne.
Jackson Browne was just awesome. That boy had so many guitars. It was incredible. And he played with a backup band that was just out of this world. And little Sarah Watkins was just a-blazing. She was smoking hot. I loved her. Her violin work just threw me right out the door. And her brother was awesome.
I love Jackson Browne. And, you know, I got that special birthday song for Sean to download for you.
I love that.
And, you know, when he started with the Pretenders, I think his first album came out in 1974. And here we are in 2012.
Yeah. And we're down the road from there.
How old is Jackson Browne?
He's 64, I believe.
Yeah. How's he look?
64.
Yeah, he does. Huh?
But, you know, again, it's the mileage, you know.
Right.
He's, you know, been through lots of stuff and had, you know, personal tragedies, but also, you know, been on the road a lot. And but, you know, he looks like he's in tip-top condition, and he played like 3 straight hours and then stood in line for an hour and a half after that afterwards, and we met him in line. And it was, you know, a great venue with wonderful musicians, and they had a blast. And he let you know he was really enjoying himself.
And you said there was just like a couple hundred people there.
Yeah, it was like 250, 300 people at the most.
Yeah.
It was really a really tight little venue. I loved it. And we were sitting on like the 11th row, right smack in the middle. And you could, you know, he was like 35 feet away. So he had a whole stage full of people. And just playing those instruments just like there was no tomorrow. Everybody, all awesome musicians, just smoking.
And remember the Beatles song, Will You Still Need Me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Yeah, man, I'll tell you, I want to see him some more.
Yeah,
he was great.
And here they are, you know, here these guys are in their 60s.
Yeah.
And they're still bringing it.
Yeah, he was definitely bringing it.
That's awesome.
He was great. On one song, he forgot the lyrics and was making fun of himself because he couldn't get it. He says, you know, you get that one word and you don't know it. Something, 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 and he gets to the halfway through the verse, and he just starts it in. You know, he says sometimes you just got to go in there. You know, and he was just, and everybody, the whole audience just laughed, and we were all loving it because here's this guy who's like been on the road for 40 years, whatever, and he's still hitting hard, and he just lets it go. You know, it was no big deal, whatever.
I so respect because it's something that I've done a little bit in my life. Want to do more of, as we were talking at the beginning of the program, about not being done yet. But I so respect people who make a living, and make a fine living, just being themselves and
yeah.
just maxing out their own talents. And their
exactly.
You had told me just recently, I mean the last week or so, because the challenge that I've had doing the consulting and the life coaching is that, you know, from time to time I've made some pretty good money, but basically I've given it away. And,
yeah.
And you told me, you gave me some great advice, and I put it into practice immediately. You said, if you give it away, that's what people will expect. And so
exactly.
And so the next person I spoke to about what I do for people, I call myself a life coach. Chris is an intermediator. We're going to talk about the intermediation in a second. But I immediately went to I said it's not expensive, but this is how I make my living. And
yeah.
that person wasn't particularly interested, at least at that moment. The next person that I spoke to about it, they signed up. And again, I approached it immediately, relatively soon after we started talking about what the fee would be. And he was like, "I'm down with that. That sounds like right up my alley." So
great, awesome.
But it's always an interesting dichotomy with you, Chris Harrington, because here you are, this very, you know, highfalutin, philosophical, anarchy loving, everything's holy, everything's righteous, and yet the practicality of which you bring to bear your teaching and your insight is remarkable. It's a very interesting.
We're living right here on the planet.
Juxtaposition, yeah.
You know, the way I talked to a business manager down in Houston, Gordon Pena, is just a brilliant guy, works in the food industry, and he says, let me ask you a question. What's the limit to which you can work with your customers? And I said, well, you know, sometimes I'd like to do things that I can't afford to do. You know, I go visit them or go see them or hang out with them or go somewhere or, you know, I could get them, you know, a nutritionalist or something like that. But, you know, it just depends on how much money I've got to, you know, service the contract with. And he says, so you're telling me that if you need to do more, you need to charge more. Is that right? And I said, yeah. And he said, so there's a reason why you need to charge people. It's in order to offer them a better service. Now, that hadn't really dawned on me. I don't know why, but, you know, the more I make on the contract with somebody, the more services I can offer them because I have greater latitude to be able to bring in subcontractors. I hadn't really thought of it. You know, I'd like to do so-and-so. I wish we could do this and that, I would say. But he said, you got to think about that from the very beginning. And that's a part of your original contract. And I'd really thought about that. I want to give people the best service I possibly can. So, you know, what I usually do is I say, a thousandth of your gross total. So let's say somebody makes $17,000 a year, then I would charge them $17 an hour. And if they made $100,000 a year, then I would offer them $100 an hour would be the contract. And the reason I would do that is that I would offer them more service. They can afford more service, and I would definitely give them more service. You know, when I'm giving it away, I can only afford to give away so much.
Right.
I can't pay people for me to work with them.
Right.
But if people pay me more, I'll give them more.
Right. And by the way, you guys know this that have been listening to the show, but you can contact Chris at Running Turtle 87 or on Facebook at Chris Harrington. And this type of expertise, I think, Chris, how fair is it to say, is available to anybody.
It's true. Yep. I'm an equal opportunity workhorse.
All right, workhorse. So talk to me about how everything is sacred and the importance of self-intermediation.
Okay. Well, you know, the concept of effectiveness, once you get the concept of morality out of the way, what effectiveness does is it puts you in to the stream of consciousness of the person that you're working with. So what do they deem is effective? And then from there, can you match up what they're saying with what they're doing? Now, that's my first clue as to what I need to do with someone. I'll say, you know, what's your value system? What are you up to? What do you want to do? And they'll start talking about it. I'm taking mental notes, and I start looking at that, and I say, wait, I hear you talking about this, right? You want to be a nutritionist, and yet you're, let's say, 100 pounds overweight. So how does that work for you? Because you need to be able to demonstrate your ability with what you're projecting in the world. You know, if you're going to be a fashion designer, you need to be able to, you know, come at it with clothing that shows you understand what fashion's all about. So
right.
Whatever it is that you're putting out there, you need to be able to come across with it.
Right.
So you got to walk your own talk. So that's my first clue, is I look at those two things and differentiate and find out what's going on. Because hopefully if they match, then, you know, people are doing their best job. And then updating from there and seeing what we can do to make sure that they're getting the best possible solutions for themselves so that they can learn what quality is all about. I'm a big proponent of quality because I think that once you learn, as Perzik said in the Zen of Motorcycle Maintenance, once you understand what quality is all about, it pervades every other area of your life. And I think that's a really a big aspect of talking with people about what they want, because everyone wants quality, but they're not quite sure what quality is. So we got to identify that.
All right.
Okay?
Yep.
So in terms of identifying, I want to stay neutral about people's personal philosophies or their religion or their politics. You know, I might ask them to, you know, help me define their terms or to understand more deeply what their reasoning is. But I'm certainly not, you know, if you're pro this or anti that, I don't have a dog in that fight. For myself personally, I do have opinions about things, but my opinions don't have anything to do with what other people's choices are. You know, your choice is your choice, and all I want to do is make sure that for yourself you're not being hypocritical. Once you're mapped out and your talk and your walk are matching, well, then I'd say we're good to go.
All right.
And you probably would say the same thing, too.
Yep.
You know, be happy with yourself. You know, get some joy in your life and use that as your standard, and then get happy as often as you can where you're matching that those two things up, and you're doing way better than most people in the world.
Exactly,
because
I mean, there's so many people that aren't happy unless they're unhappy. They're not happy.
Yeah, that is true. Why is that?
I mean, I think that it is I think there, on some level, is a genetic thing, plus an environmental thing. Where did you find your value as a child? What was emphasized?
You mean, are you asking me personally?
Well, I wasn't, but since you took it that way, yeah.
Okay. From my grandmother. My grandmother was deaf, and so she had around the house things that she was interested in. She, you know, looked at astrology and handwriting analysis and Fate magazine and things about the occult and, you know, all things deeply occult. And so I read a lot of that literature even as a young kid. You know, if it wasn't comic books and Mad Magazine, it was occult literature. And so by the time I was, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, I had already read all kinds of paranormal psychology and all kinds of wild stuff, Edgar Casey and all those things. I'd already read all that stuff. And I wasn't doing any schoolwork, but I was certainly doing, you know, psychic entertaining at the house. And she gave me a tremendous look into the human psyche and was very communicative about that. And so since she didn't learn sign language, she wrote all the time. Or I would write and she would read. And then she could read it. And she could talk out loud, and her speech was uninhibited because she lost her hearing when she was 35 years old. But she was completely capable of communicating with me about extremely dense emotional issues with human beings because she was so interested in it, reading the human psyche and understanding psychic events and things. And so that's what we spent all of our time about. And for me, it was normal and natural to look at different religions, for example, as different facets of people's understanding of how they related to the universe.
Yeah, but where did you gain, because how this little phase of our discussion started was to say that there's most people, I would even say, would way rather talk about the hassles in their lives than about the good things that are happening. And you find those people that don't just see the glass half full, they really feel like their cup is overflowing. Those people are few and far between. So obviously, you are on that side of looking at the positive, looking at the benefit, looking at the thing that does make things more effective. So where did that come from for you?
Well, from my grandmother, really. I mean, she was a person who she was. She, you know, she lost her eyesight. She lost her hearing. She lost the cartilage in her nose. She had a disease that just took over her sensorium. But she was uninhibited about those things. She just went on through the entire thing and just had this phenomenal ability to remain optimistic throughout life. And I just loved that about her because she generated in me a sense of exploring. And so I can remember all during my childhood kind of being abandoned by my parents because they were going through a lot of personal hassles, but that didn't bother me. I just went out and explored, and so I, at an early age, you know, would just jump on my bicycle and just drive all over town. I lived in Tyler, Texas, and we explored that place to no end, and I went everywhere I wanted to go. As long as I made a home by supper, nobody seemed to care, so whatever. And I've been like that my whole life.
What kind of hope is there for, as we said, the majority of human beings that do not see the joy of life, that do not see the wonderment and the beauty of things, and they're just looking for things to bitch about?
Well, I think that might be a little bit overstating the case, but I think I generally get what you're saying, that people are overburdened with the complexity and how dense things are, especially if you take the case, for example, how the average encyclopedia changed over the last 150 years. It was 5 volumes about a half an inch thick in about 1900. And that was about everything that most people needed to know. And there was a time about 10 or 15 years ago when most normal shelves couldn't hold the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now it's so god-awful big. If you look at something like Wikipedia, who knows how big Wikipedia is? it just goes on and on and on. It's a wormhole of information. So, you know, there's so much for people to know. You've got this incredible increase of people who they're terrified of even leaving their parents' house, and so they're still at home at, you know, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40. You know, sounds like somebody trying to make a sale. Hey, 35, you know, but they just can't see themselves as ever going out in the world because it's just too complex. And so it's taking people longer and longer and longer to get under their belt, you know, what it is that they need to know in order to get through life.
So how does self-intermediation allow people to be able to grow, to be able to stay positive, to be able to deal with life and become more effective?
Okay. The single most prevalent concept within the field of optimism is that people believe that they can make a change in their own lives by making choices and implementing in a proactive way things that will cause changes. All right? Pessimistic people do not believe that they could do anything. They think they're being controlled by everybody around them. It's, you know, the government, or it's those welfare people, or it's the Republicans, or it's the Democrats, or it's the Russians. Somebody else is always controlling and pulling their strings. My mom did this, my dad did that, so-and-so and so-and-so. All these people are controlling me. And so they don't make a move. They don't bust a move to do anything. They can't. They're terrified. They're looking at a blank page, and there's never anything coming down the road. Optimistic people are like, give me that blank page. I'll fill that sucker up. Oh, yeah, those people, well, you just pass those people by, and you do this other thing. Or if that doesn't work, you try this, you know? They're exploratory, and they know that they can make a change. Give them a couple of, you know, possibilities. Give them a little bit of elbow room, and those people are squeezing through unbelievably small spaces because they know they can make a change. And that is what I gathered more and more as I went through childhood. I knew that there were things out there that were, you know, alternatives, but as soon as I started knocking on doors and taking a look, every time I opened up a door, it was like the TARDIS for Doctor Who. There was this incredible increase in possibilities. And that happened, you know, exponentially. Every time I went through the next phase, it would get bigger and bigger and bigger until finally I was just totally amazed all the time. Like when people talk about being bored, I have no idea what that looks like. I've never been bored a day in my life.
But your days are, I mean, there's certain things you do every day.
Yeah, but every single minute of every day.
Right,
you know?
But
it was my birthday today. I spent the whole day working, and I had a blast.
In fact, I asked you if you wanted to take tonight off for your birthday. You were like, why would I want to do that? I
mean, yeah.
I don't know. That's what people do. They take the day off on their birthday.
I don't know why. Maybe they don't like what they're doing in the first place. I love what I'm doing every single day, so I can hardly wait to get up and do it. In fact, I get up at 3:30 or 4 o'clock almost every day just so I can get started.
What time do you go to bed?
10:30 or 11, something like that. I get about 4 to 5 hours of sleep. Maybe not that much. Sometimes only 3 hours.
Uh-huh.
But I'm excited.
I could tell.
It's life. I mean, you know, you don't get to do this every other day. I mean, it's like today. It's it. Today's the day. Let's do it now. Why wait?
Well, that's what I've caught a little bit of heat for not waiting on a certain important relationship, which I won't get into. But I agree, man. It's just like, this is it. This is not a dress rehearsal.
That's right. But I think, though, that we could, you know, you and I started making lists, and I started talking about lists and how little bitty tiny things, and you were like, man, I don't know if I could do that. Then you started making these tiny lists, and it was like even the list itself could be on the list. And you were like so shocked. That's like so simple and so easy. But the simple things in life that can make such a big change, let me give you a couple of examples, okay?
Yep.
All right. So let's say that, say for example, that you decided you were going to, instead of buying a bag of chips and a candy bar and a pack of cigarettes and a six-pack of beer and a soda, which is all about $10 or $11, right? Let's say instead of buying those things, you took that 10 bucks and you put it into a savings account at 5%. And you did that starting the day that your kid was born. And you did it until his 18th birthday. Using compound interest, that would be worth $120,000. that would pay for just about any college education. But people don't think about it that way. I call it bleeding out. They bleed out all the time. They don't have any way of functionally taking care of and digesting the idea that they need to be responsible for every penny that they've got. Because they're not thinking about it. Oh, well. All right? Let me give you another example.
All right.
Let's say that cleaning up your house during TV commercials with 4 hours of TV per day, that would be about 1 hour of cleaning for every 4 hours of TV. All right.
Yeah.
So you quit, you put 25 things away. That's about 200 calories that you burn an hour. All right. Let's say that you walk from the parking lot as far out the parking lot as you can up to the store and then back again. That's 35 calories. Let's say that you dropped one can of soda from your diet every day. That's 140 calories negative. Let's say that you eat breakfast every day and you eat fruit and protein only, and so you drop 100 calories from your breakfast menu, and then finally you walk for 1 hour per day at 100 calories, all right? That's negative 575 calories a day. If you did that for a year, you'd lose 60 pounds.
Wow.
60 pounds. Now, that's huge. And then if you consider on top of that, if you exercised, or if you, you know, went at your food intake, you could literally, you know, knock 100 pounds off yourself in a year just by simply paying attention. So if you look at this kind of thinking where you're looking at just 1% of the trouble that's in front of you and you work at it a little bit every day.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Think about these ideas. Money. Or your weight. Or housework. You know, I clean house, but I only do it during the TV commercials. I work out the rest of the time while I'm watching TV. What about working on your yard? A little bit every day. You just, let's say you just knocked out one TV program. Instead of watching TV for that hour, you went out and worked outside in the yard. That'd be like 300 calories while you're working on the yard. But I think of an hour, that's 365 hours that you worked on your yard. Just hours that you were giving away to TV, but instead you put it in your yard. What about on your job while you're working there? What if instead of going, I hate this place, you went, I'm going to change this place. I like where I work. I'm going to do something about it. What about on your hobby? Or you go back to school or you go for a bike ride for a week out and you're gone for a week on your bike and then you bicycle back for a week. All right? You could lose 20 pounds in 2 weeks that way. It's amazing what you can do for yourself in a short amount of time. What about if you applied this thinking to your relationships in terms of, like, say, your romance? Let's say you lost your spring and your step, and you decide that you're going to start getting romantic again. You do it incrementally, a little bit at a time. You don't want to bowl somebody over like, you know, what the heck is this guy up to? But, you know, a little bit at a time, and you did that over 100 days. Could you change your relationship around? Or if you started, like, reading, writing, or listening, like, say, for example, RSA tapes on the Internet or TED Talks, or even if you went through your favorite music and you said, I'm going to listen to all my records or all my CDs or all my tapes, you know, or all your 8-tracks, whatever you got that you haven't been listening to for a while. And if you don't like it, pitch it out. Get some space in your house. Or what about not watching TV, but instead you work out or do something else different? And you just do it for a week. You could change your life in a short amount of time. What about reducing your cigarette use by reducing, let's say instead of a pack a day, you only smoke 19, and then the next week, 18, and then the next week, 17, until finally you get down to a point where you don't need cigarettes at all. Or you could increase a good thing and use replacement therapy. So every time I get rid of a cigarette, instead I'm going to do 50 push-ups. So I'm going to smoke 19 cigarettes today, and I'm going to do 50 push-ups. And next week, I'm going to smoke 18 cigarettes every day, but I'm going to do 100 sit-ups or 100 push-ups. I mean, by the time you got finished, you'd be doing all kinds of working out stuff and be in really good shape, and you wouldn't care about smoking anymore. Or what if you went around your house and you unplugged all the electric things that you have? All right? Because you're bleeding out electricity all the time. All those little diodes, when you walk around in the dark and you see all those lights that are all lit up, all those little diodes, that means electricity is going to those things. Even things that are plugged in that aren't on, all those things are bleeding out electricity. You could seriously take your $300 or $400 a month electric bill, and you could take it down to about $60. You could save yourself a lot of money that way during a year. Well, what about watering and planting things? What if you just made your space more beautiful so you cared more about where you are? I think about people's yards when I go by their yard, and I think, you live there, don't you? Isn't this your place? Yeah. How do you like it? Not so much. Why? Once you fix it up so that it makes you feel like you're at home in your home. You know, why not? Or would it be working on your skill levels and your technique or your methodology for listening or reading or speaking with people? I mean, how many people are terrified of standing up and giving a speech somewhere? You could work on that a little bit at a time.
Yeah, most people say they're more afraid of getting up and speaking in public than they are of dying.
Yeah, of dying. Now, this is really strange to me, but people have these weaknesses that they have for life, right? Why carry a weakness around with you? I think that, you know, one of the things that Mike says is that inside of your weakness is hidden your greatest strength. So if you faced off your weaknesses and you said, I am going to conquer this, right? Like, say for me, this is going to sound really bizarre, but my worst thing in school was communication. I was great at math, but I hated English. Couldn't write, couldn't speak. I didn't read a book until I did not read a book in school until I was in the ninth grade. I mean, I read occult literature and stuff, so not that I couldn't read, but I never read a school book at school, like for a book report or in school or when Dick got down with Jane and all that stuff. I never read any of that stuff, not even Dr. Seuss. I didn't read any of that stuff, library books and stuff like that. Never did it. Never. I was just too inhibited. I didn't want all that stuff messing with my head.
And it was your grandma that changed you up?
Yeah, my grandmother is the one that clued me in. She says, look at this. Let me tell you something. People are writing in a book, and they're putting 50 years' worth of their experience into a few pages, and you could get that virtual information right there into your head, and you wouldn't have to live all that stuff in order to know what they know. Dude! You don't think that got my imagination going?
what's your grandma's name?
Florence K. Mattis.
Well, Florence K. Mattis, we thank you.
She's awesome, man, I'll tell you.
And because 59 years ago today, your lineage continued through this guy named Chris Harrington. And
yeah.
You're blessing our socks off, dude.
I love that.
And you're making a huge difference in my life. And,
excellent.
By extension, a lot of people that I know and care about.
Okay, intermediation. You do it.
That's what we're doing. It's exhausting, isn't it, folks? Listen.
It is.
But that burns calories when you get exhausted.
That's right.
Exactly. All right, buddy. Well, have a great rest of your birthday. And
I love you, man.
I love you too. We'll talk to you again next week.
Enjoy.
All right, there he goes, Chris Harrington.
Love it.
Get in touch with him at Running Turtle 87.
You bet.
Find him on Chris Harrington on Facebook. Seanich, thanks for the information. How many pages in Wikipedia?
Oh,
God only knows.
That was something meta for you, Chris. There's a Wikipedia article on the size of Wikipedia.
Really? I love that.
Yeah. All right, so Wikipedia, on the size of Wikipedia.
That's right.
All right, you guys, let us hear from you this week at GlennKleinOnline.com. You can email questions. Let me hear whatever is on your heart at radio@GlennKleinOnline.com. Until next time, this would be Glenn Klein Online saying... Shalom, everybody!